We have talked a lot about doctors that use their power as a doctor to their advantage, killing patients in the hospital or doing random house calls. The doctor we are going to talk about today is much different. He did use his degree to his advantage, but in a much different way. Today, we're talking about Marcial Petio. Hey guys, and welcome back to my podcast. I'm your host, Lulu, and it's great to talk to everybody again. I got on to upload and record, because I'm recording late on today's episode. And I realized I had some technical difficulties, and for some reason, my Friday upload did not post. I had a really busy weekend, so I wasn't able to like double check that went up. So it went up today early. I'm just letting you guys know that it was some technical difficulties. We're starting 2023 off good with technical difficulties. On top of that, I am sick again. So I have a really nasty sore throat. So if I sound kind of funny through it, that's why. I'm going to have to stop recording and like take a sip of my drink every couple of minutes probably. So if my recording and stuff sounds kind of funny, that's why. It kind of hurts to talk more than like 3 minutes at a time without a drink. So yeah, I've got my Dutch Bros to wash away that pain, but I'm here ready to record and talk to you about Marcial. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, so I'm just not going to say his last name. I tried to say it in the beginning. I looked up how to say it. To me, Google doesn't make any sense because that's not how I would pronounce it, but also like I can barely pronounce my own name. So yeah, we're talking about Marcial today, who is a deadly doctor. Anyways, nothing new except I'm sorry for Friday's upload and also I'm sick again. So yay, we love that. But that lets us jump right into Marcial's story. Now Marcial was born on January 17th, 1897. Early on in his life, he would begin to show some concerning behaviors. Now, this was during a different time. People were raised a lot different, so it's possible that he didn't really raise a ton of red flags at this point that it would have raised in our mind, but it was still concerning and showed a lot of things that probably should have been taken care of. For example, when he was 11 years old, Marcial would take his dad's gun from the home and bring it to school with him. Instead of, you know, showing it off or threatening people with it, he decided that he was going to just shoot it off during class and scare people. He did end up shooting it off during class, scaring the people, and it also sounds like he used it to try to force another girl to have sex with him. This is very interesting to me. As I said before, it is a very different time, and it's possible that him bringing a gun to school was a, you know, a big deal, but not like it would be now. But I still feel like this should have been a major, major red flag. It's possible that an 11-year-old will know what sex is, but the fact that he was so young and already trying to force it on another female, you know, force the activity onto her, is concerning. This did not get him very far, though. He didn't end up having sex with this other child or anything like that, and they also didn't really take care of it in a way that they would have done it nowadays. They really just gave him a slap on the wrist, told him not to do it again, and just let him go. Nowadays, if you bring a gun to school or try to force sex with another child, you'll most likely be arrested and then sent to, you know, juvie or a school for troubled kids or things like that. So we really take that stuff seriously now, and they really didn't take it seriously because everything he would do wasn't really taken super seriously. His crimes would go on to get worse. he went on to rob a post box. This is technically his second offense. I personally count this as his third offense because I count bringing it to school and shooting it off as one, trying to force another girl to have sex with him is another, and then robbing the post box. But it sounds as though that they grouped the first two together and that was a first offense, and this would be his second offense. Since he didn't seem to show any progress of getting better, they did end up charging him. They would charge him with damage of public property and theft. Because he was still a teenager, they would send him in for a mental evaluation at this point. This mental evaluation would pin down a couple different mental disorders, and because they pinned down mental disorders, they would drop every single charge that they were trying to have against him and just deem him insane. This decision didn't do anything besides give him an excuse to try to get away with doing whatever he wanted. They didn't send him to a new school. They didn't remove him from any of these situations. They didn't do anything except say, well, he's insane. And he did use this to try to get out of a lot of things. He would continue these petty little crimes and scaring people until he eventually did get kicked out of his school. When he got kicked out, they would move him to another school, and he would also get kicked out of that. From this point forwards, there would be a vicious cycle. He would do petty crimes, get kicked out of school, do petty crimes, get kicked out of school. Every single time, he never got charged with anything, and he never really got any sort of repercussions for the things that he was doing. Because they deemed him mentally unstable and insane, they did, though, want to look further into his brain and try to figure out why he was acting the way he was. They would send him off for another evaluation with a different doctor, and this would show the exact same things. Multiple diagnoses of multiple different mental disorders. They finally decided to send him to a specialty academy that was located in Paris, and in this academy, he would finally go on to complete and graduate school. Once he graduated, he decided that he wanted to do something. This was just because he was probably bored, and it's possible that he wanted to try to find something that would help him with the crime. This something, as we hear actually quite a bit, I feel like, was the army. He decided to join the French army during World War I, and he would begin to serve in January of 1916. During the time that he served, he would get wounded and gassed and suddenly begin to act crazy again. He started showing a lot of signs of an incoming mental breakdown, and because of this, they sent him home to rest and try to get him to calm down. At this time, he also began to steal blankets and army supplies, as well as wallets and morphine. The army did catch him stealing on his rest time and decided that they didn't want him around any further. He was showing signs of an incoming mental breakdown, and now he was stealing. They would diagnose him again with another mental disorder. But instead of taking him off the team, they decided they would put him on the front lines, probably in hopes that he would just die. But he didn't die. Instead, he got a pretty big injury on his foot from a grenade, and they would hospitalize him. It does sound like they had him serve a tiny bit of time for stealing from the army, and then sent him on those front lines, and now he was injured. Because of the time that he was stealing, and now his injury, they decided that it was time to discharge him with a disability pension, and they sent him home. Now, they didn't have to work around his brain anymore, and he was gone. Once he left the war again, he decided he needed something else with his life. He needed to do something else. Because he left with a disability pension, he had the option to enroll in an accelerated education program that was available for war veterans. He was considered a war veteran and looked into the schooling a little more. This was his path. This is what he wanted to do. So he began to go through this accelerated learning class about medicine. It only took him 8 months to complete medical schooling. He would leave as an intern at a medical hospital. In December of 1921, Marcel would finally get his official medical degree and relocate to an actual hospital. The way this hospital would pay him was with government money and from the patients. The way this would work is kind of, at least from what it sounds like to me, kind of like hairstylists now, where they work in a salon and the salon will pay them a base rate. They get all the tips, and at least with one of my friends that works in a salon, she gets a certain cut from everybody who comes in. Because of this, Marcel started to make quite a bit of money. And this was a fairly easy job to do. He also decided that he was going to turn to narcotics. It was very easy for Marcel to get those because of his degree. Nobody really kept tabs on those, and he himself began to take these narcotics on a regular basis, getting addicted to them. On top of that, Marcel quickly got known for handing narcotics out like candy to his patients. On top of that, because he knew best in his mind, he would do whatever he wanted. It was illegal for abortions at the time, and if somebody came in with a pregnancy that they did not want, Marcel would perform illegal abortions on women. The word began to spread about him, and people began to come to him even more. The people who were addicted to narcotics would come and see him because they could get narcotics from him. And the women and possibly children who did not want to have a baby that they could have been pregnant with would also see him, knowing that he would perform abortions for them. During this time, Marcel would also get into a relationship. Because, as Marcel thought, he knew best, he didn't feel like he needed to be in just one relationship, and he began to see another woman. This woman he was seeing on the side was one of his patients' daughters, and she would go missing in May of 1926. It is entirely possible that this side woman was Marcel's first victim, but she has never been found, so we are unsure what happened to her. The authorities did look into Marcel for a brief period of time, because there was some witnesses that said that they had seen him loading a trunk into his vehicle at one point that could have fit a body, but they couldn't find anything to prove this, and finally they settled into deeming her as a runaway and closed the investigation. And we are still unsure if this woman was a runaway or if she was Marcel's first victim. This affair did not have any effect on that previous relationship. The two of them did get married a year after the incident, and during this time, Marcel would also run for mayor. He would easily win the people over and get into the position as mayor. It's very possible that Marcel was doing all of these things to keep himself away from crime, but it didn't matter because he probably got bored and began to dabble his toe into the illegal side of things again. He began to embezzle town funds and eventually would get caught and be suspended as mayor in August of 1931. Even though he was embezzling money, the people in the town believed that this was wrong, that Marcel was being blamed with something that he didn't do, that he could do no wrong, and the people, most of them, were on his side. The entire council would quit in support of Marcel being wrongly suspended in their eyes, leaving basically every chair open. Marcel, probably bored with the medical side of things, would later down the line be elected as a councilman. He also would be found stealing, and they would suspend him from this as well. At this point, he was bored of where he was living. People were starting to wonder if they were right about Marcel being a good guy, and him and his wife decided to move to Paris to create a new life. Once in Paris, the The first plan of action was to create a fake persona, a facade that they could play up so that everybody would be impressed with Marcel and his reputation. And this was easy to do. People believed Marcel and this facade that he was putting up. He also began to hand out narcotics and perform those illegal abortions that we talked about earlier. Because of this very impressive persona he had created, the narcotic handing out, and the illegal abortions, he had tons of people coming to see him all the time. And then, to make things even better for Marcel, Germany defeated France, and they would begin to draft the French people in order to do hard labor in Germany. Labor that the Germany people did not want to do, and the French people also didn't want to do. Marcel began to write fake medical certificates for the people who were being drafted, stating that they were disabled and they could not go, saving them from being drafted by Germany. Which just made people come to Marcel even more, and he got even more money. As soon as somebody got their draft letter from Germany, they would see Marcel and he would write out some fake thing to prevent them from leaving. Which meant that Germany was having a hard time drafting people from around here, and the people from around here were getting to know Marcel even better and giving him more money. This didn't stop everybody though. People were still being drafted and taken away. And then they were being sent back. As soon as they got home, they would go and see Marcel. If they were sick, had any illness or injuries, they were flocking to Marcel for help. And Marcel did everything he could to help these people. Marcel sounds amazing so far, right? He was doing everything he could to help everybody around him. He was well known. People were flocking to see him. He sounds great. And then somebody caught wind of him handing narcotics out. They would catch Marcel handing out and overprescribing narcotics, and they would convict him of this in January of 1942. It is also interesting to bring up that there were two people who were going to speak at his trial who ended up going missing, and nobody's ever been able to find out where they went. But even though they were missing two witnesses that were going to speak about him handing out too many narcotics, they would still find him guilty and only fine him $2,400, which is a lot of money back then. But think about how much money Marcel was making at this point. He had everybody coming to him, so he didn't stop what he was doing. Marcel sounds great, and I understand that maybe he was. A lot of doctors that do end up killing people start off pretty great, but for some reason, get greedy. Marcel loved money. That's why he was doing all this. He wasn't performing illegal abortions because he was thinking of the women. He was performing illegal abortions because he wanted their money. He wasn't saving people from being drafted because he cared. He was saving them because he wanted money. Marcel was money hungry. And after his fine, he wanted more money. As I said earlier, it's possible that Marcel murdered that side piece he was seeing, and it's also possible Marcel murdered the two witnesses that were going to speak at his trial. We have no proof though. We've never been able to find them, and we do not know if he was responsible for their disappearance. But it is interesting that they went missing, and Marcel later down the line would be found out to be a murderer. Marcel, being money hungry, would begin to think about more ways to make money. And this is when he got an idea. He would create a network for people to escape through. Namely, for the Jewish people to escape through. At this point, Germany was taking the Jewish people. They were placing them in concentration camps and killing them off. The Jewish people were hiding and running, trying to stay away and to stay alive. Marcel didn't see this as an opportunity to help the Jewish people. He saw this as an opportunity to make some money. His first step was to create a persona, a facade for himself. He needed to be somebody different. And he did this. He began to refer to himself as Dr. Eugene to the Jewish people so that they could hear about Dr. Eugene, who was helping the Jewish out. He also needed some allies. He couldn't spread the word alone. He would recruit 3 more people to assist him. I am unsure as to if these people were under the impression that he was a good guy helping the Jewish out, or if he was paying them. Either way, though, he had 3 people, and they began to spread the word of Dr. Eugene, who was a way out to the Jewish people. Now, even though the Jewish people were the majority of the people that were trying to get away, they were not the only ones. He knew that there was going to be resistance fighters that were going to be hiding and getting away, and even some normal criminals that for some reason or another would want to use this escape network. So him and the 3 other people would spread the word of Dr. Eugene, who was helping people disappear. And then people began to come to him to escape and start a new life. People would begin to meet with Dr. Eugene, set up a day and a time, and they would come to his home with their belongings and everything they needed to start a new life. The entire time, Marcel would play a kind doctor who was helping people get out and saving them. He would tell them about the places they were going to and inform them, though, that before he could get them away, they needed to have all of the required vaccines. These vaccines were to prevent any new sicknesses from happening in the new place and to make it look like they had been there all along. On top of that, Marcel was giving these vaccines for free because he was just there to help, right? But Marcel was money hungry. He was not giving vaccines away for free. When these people who were eager to get away and start a new life would agree, Marcel would inject them with his vaccine. But Marcel did not have an escape route, and he did not have a vaccine. When you were in the room with Marcel, he would inject you with cyanide to kill you. Cyanide is a chemical compound. It is extremely poisonous, and it is very, very fast acting. Interestingly enough, it was used as a chemical weapon in World War I, which is probably why Marcel knew about it and could get his hands on it fairly easy. When cyanide is in the body, it will prevent your cells from using oxygen, rapidly causing the cells in your body to die off. Because these cells cannot use oxygen, it prevents oxygen from getting to the heart and the brain. And within minutes of being exposed to cyanide, you will die. Just minutes after these people would be injected with this cyanide vaccine, they would die. When they were dead, Marcel would check their pockets. And like I said, because they were all under the impression they were running away and starting a new life, they had all of their possessions and money that they needed to start a new life, making a very good payday for Marcel. Once they were dead and robbed, though, he still had dead bodies. He had to get rid of these dead bodies, otherwise the next person who was going to come in to run away would see the bodies and run. So he had to dump them. At first, he would just dump them in a body of water, but he knew that it's very possible that they would be found eventually, so he needed to find a different way to get rid of the bodies. In 1941, he would buy a home, and in this home, he would create a space to dispose of the bodies. Out back, he dug a ginormous pit and filled it with quicklime. He would dump the bodies that were in a canvas bag into this quicklime and just let the lime eat them away until they disappeared. Because this takes time, though, he needed to have a second method. He was having people come over all the time. He would have a huge furnace installed, and in this furnace, he would put body parts in it and burn them to ashes. Marcel and the story of Eugene would go on for 3 years. He would tell people he had a way out. They would come to their home. He would poison them with cyanide and then destroy their body. At one point, the Germans would get wind of Marcel helping Jewish people out, and they would arrest him and investigate. They couldn't find anything to prove that Marcel was doing that because he didn't have a way out. He wasn't helping them out, and they would just let him go. Then finally, 3 years after buying the home, the neighbors would have enough of Marcel. On March 11th, 1944, they would call the authorities and complain about a horrible smell that had been coming from Marcel's home for a while, and that he always had a huge amount of smoke that was leaving his home. The authorities arrived to do a wellness check, and this is when they would discover a huge stove lit up in the basement. Marcel was not home at the time. In this stove, oven, whatever you want to call it, they found human remains. And piles of human remains all over the basement. At this point, this was more than a wellness check. They had something more, and they began to search the home. Some authorities wandered out into the backyard and discovered that pit that had partially eaten away people laying in the quicklime. They found at least 10 different people that had been murdered and had their body parts in Marcel's home or were in the pool of quicklime. On top of that, they found a ton of clothing, suitcases, and property that people had brought into the home in hopes of escaping. And they needed to find Marcel. He knew. He knew that the authorities had discovered the home, and he knew that they were looking for him. He began to jump from home to home, staying with his friends and informing them that he had killed some Germans and that they were coming after him. These friends believed him and gave him a safe place for a while, and eventually he moved in with one of his patients that liked him and would begin to go by another name. Marcel would also grow out his beard in an attempt to hide his features from authorities. He would go on to get a job and deal with prison interrogations, which is interesting. During this time, though, somebody would recognize Marcel and would turn him into the authorities, and he would finally be arrested. During this trial, he claimed he was innocent. He said he was only killing enemies of France and that he was part of the resistance. When asked, though, he had no proof. He knew none of the resistance places or people. He was not part of the resistance, and it was very, very clear. They had found enough evidence to prove that he had murdered at least 21 people in his home. They had also heard of Dr. Eugene and asked him to prove his escape route, which he didn't have one. He was finally charged on March 19th, 1946, with the murders of at least 21 people. At that point, he finally admitted he had killed anywhere from 19 to 27 people. In his words, "But we believe it's possible that he killed more than 60 people." Marcel would be charged and then sentenced to beheading. He did manage to live a couple days past his beheading date because they were having some guillotine issues that prevented him from being executed. But as soon as they fixed it, On May 25th, 1946, he would finally be punished for his murders. And he would be beheaded. I do believe that he killed closer to 60 people. If he was constantly having the Jewish and the people who were afraid come to run away for the 3 years that he operated out of at least that house, I'm sure there was more than 21 people. If he were to murder somebody every month, he would have at least 36 people. But with Marcel and his greed, I think it was more than once a month. I think Marcel murdered people often. He murdered the hopeful. Marcel put a facade that he was a good guy who was helping. He didn't perform illegal abortions to help women. He didn't hand out narcotics to help the people in pain. And he didn't allow a space for the Jewish people to hide and run. Marcel did all of that to make a quick buck. And instead of helping them out, murdering them and robbing them was easier.
There may be false or misleading information throughout this podcast. All facts have been researched to the best of my abilities, but accidents do happen. If this is a story you are interested in knowing more about, I highly recommend doing your own research. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.